You already know what time it is. It's the Why We Stayed podcast. Hit them. Welcome back to the Why We Stayed podcast. Man, I am joined by my favorite professor that was never my professor. Professor Ed, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
Thank you for having me, Mike. Can I call you Big Mike for the day?
Wow, that would be...
Mike, Pastor Mike.
Wow, I mean, Big Mike feels like an honor to do that. I mean, either way feels great. Listen... Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? Tell us where you're from. Just give us a quick rundown of Professor Ed's story.
All right, Mike. So before I begin, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. I do want to also thank you for the work that you do and that you continue to do. So my name is Ed. Obviously, I was born and raised in the South Bronx. I was raised by three very strong, beautiful, independent women who all immigrated to this country from Dominican Republic. Growing up, I was an athlete. I played football. My first dream was to enter the NFL draft. That never happened, but in some ways, I'm thankful that it didn't. After high school, I'm just kind of going to fast forward a bit here, Mike. After high school, I went to college in Rochester, New York, which is somewhat how we know each other, Mike. And in Rochester, New York, sort of inspired the work that I would go on to do for the rest of my life. And I say that because while I was in high school and while I was in grade school, I had never really been around white folks at all. One of the very tragic things about the New York City public education system is that it is the most segregated education system in the country, in New York City, that is. And so up until college, I had never been in the classroom with a white person. And so when I got to college, I always had a sense that, like, we were poor kind of in my neighborhood, but I didn't quite tie that into race yet. And when I got to college, I had realized that I, in fact, was a black man in this country and that there were sort of material consequences to that fact. I also met some of the closest friends I have in my life today in college, and some of them were white. So college was a very interesting experience for me. And after college, I went on to get a Master's of Fine Art in Fiction. Growing up, I was also big book guy. My mom is a sort of a voracious reader. She just sort of eats them all up. And my mom was kind of very big, not kind of, she was very big on education when we were growing up. And so, you know, she used to do things like lock me into a room and make me read for 2 hours every day before I could go outside and play football. And she also used to make me read through the dictionary and jot down 5 to 10 words a day, all these sort of wild things that I didn't want to do at the time, but that I grew to love. And so I got this Master's of Fine Art. I wanted to write a collection of stories. I'm still working on the collection of stories. But also fiction was a way of helping me sort of understand the world, you know? Through fiction and through books, I was trying to sort of look for answers that I couldn't quite find in my regular day. And also another thing that books did for me, Mike, was I like to tell folks that reading is an exercise of empathy, you know? You may not live, like, my reality is my reality. Yours is yours, Mike. But through fiction, we can sort of, in some ways, reimagine ourselves, right, in those worlds that aren't like our own. And, you know, there's so many things I could say about just books and fiction, but that was its own.
Yeah. Plan. Yeah. Well, I don't want to cut you off quick, but, you know, one of the things that I'm sure our listeners can already tell is you didn't just get a normal education. I think with some of the words that you're saying and just the clear, just way that you're describing just the beauty in books, the beauty in literature. You went to Harvard, so you didn't just go to any graduate program in the country. You went to Harvard, and not only did you go to Harvard, but you were actually asked to speak at your Harvard graduation. And one of the things I'd love to just hear a little bit about, maybe, again, I think it's so fascinating that you share growing up in a primarily Black community, moving to upstate New York for college at St. John Fisher for your undergrad, where it's, again, a primary white college. And then all of a sudden you go to Harvard, and not only are you what I would call an average attender, but you actually rise to this place of prominence where you're now actually asked to speak at the graduation ceremony. So just maybe share a little bit what that Harvard journey was like.
Harvard was really, really interesting. And I say that because one of the things that I tell a lot of folks is that Harvard sort of functions on this myth of itself. And what it needs everyone on the outside to believe, Mike, is that everyone on the inside is 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10 when we talk about academic aptitude. And really what happens is I discovered, and maybe this is relative, who knows, but I discovered that there was actually a nice range at a place like Harvard, and that people that looked like me, people from my neighborhood, could very much so be students at that place. So that was really interesting. And the only reason, Mike, to answer your thing about like why I had some sort of success at the school was because I had a kind of conviction. You know what I mean? I knew what I was sure about. I knew what I wanted to fight for. And I knew when I got to Harvard, I wanted to bring the people that had never been in that place to that place. I wanted to demystify it for them. And so I went on to like moderate certain conversations that were very discomforting for folks, but that ultimately helped folks grow. I worked with teachers across disciplines to sort of address the issue of mass incarceration. And then eventually I went on to give the commencement speech. So yeah, Mike, it was an interesting experience overall. If I could do it again, I would.
That's awesome. Well, if I could do it again, I think I would go to Harvard as well. But I don't think I have that choice. So anyway, but I will continue with the podcast here. This requires no college education, just a microphone and an editing program. So it's been great. But Eddie, you had one of the interesting things about the speech, and this is maybe where we'll kind of pivot the podcast conversation, is you, and from all the years I've known you, you've never been one to fit in a box. So this never surprised me. This didn't shock me. But when you went up to give a speech in one of the most prominent universities, colleges all across the world, when you went up to give a speech, you didn't go up in this, you know, put together suit and tie. You went up there and you were wearing a t-shirt that had a significant meaning to you. Can you share a little bit about, number one, what that t-shirt meant, but then number two, maybe some of those emails and some of those hate type things that actually started coming as a result of you wearing that shirt?
Yeah, Mike. So, you know, that's a very emotional thing for me. The t-shirt I wore, had the face of Khalif Browder on it, someone that I had the chance to mentor before his untimely passing. Khalif Browder was a young 16-year-old in the Bronx, New York, who was wrongly incarcerated. And after 3 years of that wrongful incarceration, they realized that he was not guilty of any criminal wrongdoing. The damage had already been done. Khalif tried to take his own life 3 times while he was on Rikers Island. And then he did it when he was freed. And I wore his face on the shirt because he was one of the very few people that I told I would apply to Harvard. And he believed in me from the start. And I thought that going into that moment, I thought that Harvard does have so much power. And yet they're so far behind in the race for equity and in the race for true justice. And it seems surreal almost to me that something like that could happen to a 16-year-old Black boy or a 16-year-old Latino boy or girl in this country. And it happens time and time again. And So that was one reason. And the second reason, which has always been very important to me, is because I do believe that I want to help create the space for kids who are from the hood everywhere, not just from my hood in the Bronx, but kids from the hood everywhere, to imagine themselves in these positions. All the success I've had as an educator, or any of the success I've had as an educator, hasn't been because I've provided the best academic instruction, but I think it has been because I reflect both the character, of my students and their physical likeness. And I think what happens is when they see themselves in you in such a deep way, the tattoos, the vernacular, the same gestures, they begin to imagine themselves in the positions that I'm in or that anyone else is doing it in. Which is to say, it does become the meeting place between aspirations and what's practical. And so I wanted to take that moment at Harvard on the big stage to show the kids that I love the most, right? The least of these, some would say, that this can be you, right? This is me, unapologetically me. And I got to this spot and you could do it too. So that's why
That's so, so beautiful.
Thank you, Mike. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I didn't want to leave out that email for you.
Yeah. So let me just, again, kind of gear it up here as you maybe take a second just to look for the email. Well, I mean, I know there's many, but maybe choose one. You know, I think to hear that side of the story, as a white man in America, I cannot even begin to understand. Again, part of what I'm hoping this podcast is able to create is just create healthy conversation around it, around topics that I can't understand, but I'm gonna call you, who's a brother of mine, and just listen and just try to absorb some of the things that you're sharing. And you know, one of the things that has really torn me up with your story and with your journey is some of these emails that you've received from white people, from people like me, but yet there's a different, you know, level of hatred, I guess, in them or whatever else. And so, man, I, as much as I don't want you to share, I do want you to share, maybe one or a few of some of the emails that you've received as a result of giving that speech, at Harvard.
Yeah. So, you know, Mike, the truth is that these things happen. This is the world we live in. And so I will go ahead and share the email. The first one I received read as follows. He titled the subject, "Please Read." And then he wrote, "I'm going," and he, this is a supposed he, it could very much so be a woman. "I'm going to address you as boy because that's what you are. I saw your commencement speech online, and here's what I have to say about that. Why in this world would you deliver a speech at the most prestigious school in our country wearing a f***ing t-shirt with a monkey's face on it? It's sad enough that they have to let like you in on affirmative action. What was your GPA there? A 2.8? And no, I'm not racist, but there's a difference between good blacks and bad blacks like you, boy." Mm. And so, you know, Mike, I can't have this conversation without talking about faith, because one of the reasons that I believe I ended up at a place like Harvard, and one of the reasons that I believe I was the commencement speaker, is because God wanted me to be. You know, I always tell folks that God doesn't make mistakes, and the fight isn't going to be easy. I knew that when I signed up a long time ago, but that doesn't mean that you stop fighting. And so when I get these kind of emails, it reminds me of why I fight, and it reminds me of why I pray. Because there are people that you know, a person like this, if he apologized, I would be fine with him. You know what I mean? Because I do believe in forgiveness. But I do believe that some people are just confused, and some people are angry, and some people are hurt. I don't think that that justifies his email, but I think that before I argued with him, or before I turned my back on this guy, if it's a guy or a girl, or a woman, I mean, I'm sorry, I would love to sit down and have a conversation with this person and figure out why they're so angry. You know, I do think that that some of the reasons are some of the things that you discussed. I did go out there and my tats were visible, and you know, I did have colleagues image and his likeness on my shirt. And I do think that people are sort of resistant of different presentations of intelligence, different versions of it. They want it to look a certain way, and when that mold doesn't fit, or what they expect it to be is different, they're angered by it. And you know, there are a host of reasons for these feelings. And I would just like to have a conversation with the guy, but you know, I can't. I mean, it was an anonymous email.
Yeah. Well, I think, as I said before, I as a white person in America, I'm speechless, and you can probably hear it in my voice. You can probably hear it in my response even now. I truly, truly do not know what to say, what to do, how to help. Do I share that? Do I try to fix that? And really, man, I think my question, and you know, some of the questions that I've asked my black brothers over the course of really the past 3 or 4 years, as I've seen racism continue to grow. And again, I know it's happened years, hundreds of years beyond that. But for me personally, over the past few years, you know, the questions that I ask are, how can I help? Or how do we move forward? Or what can white America do just to help and to not allow hate emails like that to arrive?
That's a great question, Mike, and it's a brave one. And you know, Mike, there's just really one way to say this. I think that some of the folks that send these emails, if we're going to talk about white America now, are not you specifically, but your uncles, your cousins, your daughters, your brothers, your sisters. And I think that one thing I would say is that, like, before white folks feel the need to go into communities of color to help out, which is welcome, at least in my sort of opinion, they should have these tough conversations at home. You know, it's like, why go and teach a kid that looks like me when you could go and teach a kid that you know, that lives in your neighborhood that may be white, and that needs some of the grace that you have to offer, that needs some of the enlightening that you have to offer, and that frankly needs some of the knowledge, right? Just basic history that some white folks might have to offer. And I think that that's a big, big first step. You know, have these tough conversations with your family about why they voted for someone like Trump, who said about the Central Park Five after they were exonerated that they were still guilty. Who said about a person like Barack Obama that he was not born in this country? I mean, I'm not going to say whether he is or is not racist, but listen, where there is smoke, there is fire, my friends.
And I'm sure if we started to talk about politics on this thing, we could go probably for another 7 hours or so of a show. But you know, I think the one thing that I've always appreciated about you is, even though you are such a large man in stature, and I mean that in terms of, if you've never seen this man, his arms are probably the size of my head. But even though you are a large man in stature, I've come to appreciate the even larger man that you are inside, and your charisma, your energy, your enthusiasm is all great, but I think your heart and your reasoning for doing the things that you do come from a genuine place. And you know, I think despite all of this, despite the racism, despite the speech and the success and the failures and everything in between, despite all of this, you have chosen to stay in your hometown of the Bronx. And my question is, despite all of these things, what has caused you to say, nope, this is my home?
That's a great, great question, Mike. And thank you for the kind things that you said about me, Mike. I believe those very same things about you. So the answer on why I chose to stay is simple, at least for me. I think that a lot of people, like, me or from my neighborhood, rightly and reasonably so, finish places like Harvard, and then, you know, they go and get these big jobs and they move out. Because one, the Bronx is actually like literally dangerous. And two, because it becomes a sort of symbol of progress and upward mobility for them. And that's all reasonable. And some of these folks even continue to do the work in the community, but they live outside of it. And that's fine too. I just think that the best work happens from inside the community. I don't believe out to in. I believe in. I believe I want to walk to the grocery store and I want kids in my neighborhood to see me, the kid that went to Harvard, the kid that delivered the commencement speech, to be able to touch me, to be able to understand that this isn't a myth. This isn't what Jay-Z was for me growing up, right? Like, is he actually real? Because he was already so, so far out and disconnected in a way that was physical, right? Because he's obviously still very connected to his community. I wanted to be the person that they could see and touch, and I think that that makes a difference in examples and in what you believe you can do. So that's really why I stayed, man, because I believe if God gave me the talents, I have to maximize them. And that's best done from in my community. So that's why I stayed, man. I'm just a Bronx kid forever and ever.
That's awesome. I think the part in me as you speak that I'm sure there's listeners that are listening that go, I mean, again, I'm trying to put my mind in the mind of a listener right now. I'm sure there's some people that they keep going back to that email and they keep kind of scrubbing this podcast and going back and they haven't even gotten past the anger and the issue and the pain of that email. And again, I'm not trying to reverse our podcast to go back there, but I think there's value in what you're expressing right now, where you have not allowed this anger and bitterness of what other people's opinions of you are to damage the future that you believe God has put in front of you. And I say that because I think, again, not even talking about race for a second, I think in general in life, there are hurts and hangups and issues that come to us that we actually can't control. And when they come to us, we really have a choice to make. And the choice is, are we going to run from this? And are we going to, you know, choose to avoid this and just be mad and be angry and live our whole life trying to fight this thing off? Or are we going to be proactive, and are we going to actually pursue it and actually run towards the lion as opposed to away from it? And you know what I love about you choosing to stay is you've chosen to engage the fight, but the fight isn't one of anger, it's one of love, and it's one of compassion, and it's one of, you know, seeing the best in people and calling that out of them. And, you know, I think it's just so encouraging, I think, for me to hear and for many of the listeners who are seeing and feeling so much anger. What would you say would be that critical moment for you when you were able to leverage anger for good? Maybe describe how that process happened, because I can't imagine, Eddie, you had this feeling right when you got the email where you're like, oh, amen, God is good. He's going to use this. I mean, there of course was the emotion of anger, but how did you use that as gasoline for the fire that God's put in you?
I'll say maybe a few things about that. One thing I'll say might be that, one thing I would say is that, you know, if you don't question your faith probably isn't strong enough. When you get emails like this, you do question your faith, because you begin to have real serious questions about humanity and doubts about humanity, and it's all reasonable. So I'm not going to pretend that my faith is always steadfast. You know, sometimes I question why. I think that that's a healthy thing to do. And I think that I have to keep reminding myself that God gave me these talents to fight this very thing that I sort of resent in the world. And maybe resent is the wrong word, but these things that are sort of damaging, these things that actually sort of manifest themselves in death. right? Because these emails are the same feelings that lead and inspire these cases that make national headlines, you know? And so, you know, a good friend of mine always says that hope is work. And the reason why I went back to the work is because you can't just sit around and hope for a better world. You actually have to work for that world. And, you know, people always talk about Jesus and don't ever sort of talk about like how political he was, right? Mm-hmm. And the work that he actually did. I couldn't be a hypocrite and not do it. You know, it just has to be done. And there's also like a tradition of this, you know, of this kind of struggle and this kind of fight. And who am I to walk away from that tradition, you know?
No, I think it's so powerful to hear you committed. You know, I think it's easy to be committed and angry in a moment that's fueled by emotion, but to choose to engage something even when the emotion has faded or the emotion isn't as strong, that is a powerful, powerful thing. And you know, one of the final questions that I have for you tonight is, you know, for many people who have faced or who continue to face injustice, either because of their race or their sexuality or their upbringing or whatever it is, what advice would you have for them today for people who are facing injustice on potentially a daily level?
That's a great question. I mean, I wish I had like the perfect answer for this, but you know, my faith has sort of helped me deal with the injustices of the world every single day. I mean, I would really first say, encourage folks to pray, because the things that I have prayed about in my life have come to be, you know? And then after that, I would tell people to get involved. You know, there's all this talk about being the change you wish to see in the world, but not much action behind it. And the last thing I would say, Mike, is I want to share this small story from the Bible that I always tell people whenever we're talking about this. And this is, you know, this may not answer the question directly, but the listeners should be able to tie this into their own stories, into their own lives, and this should be able to motivate and inspire people to do the work. There's this moment in the Bible where there's these sort of, and I'm going to mess the story up a bit, but you'll get the idea. When there are these two lines, and there are folks that are expecting to get into the kingdom of God, and there are folks that probably don't think they're going to get in. And the folks that, you know, that are very self-righteous and feel like they've been the best they can be, et cetera, are not getting in. And God says to them, when I was hungry, you didn't feed me. When I was imprisoned, you didn't visit me. When I was homeless, you didn't offer me shelter. When I was naked, you didn't clothe me. And they say to him, well, you were never incarcerated. You were never hungry. You were never homeless. You were never naked. And God says to them, listen, here's the moment, Mike. He says, what you did not do for the least of these, you did not do for me. And so we must live in the image and likeness of Christ. Right? We must go out into the world and actually try our best, even though we will fall short time and again. We must try our best to live that kind of life. Right? And so I would say that to anybody, try to do what Jesus did. I mean, you know?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, no, and I think the laughter is telling, of course, right? Because we're all trying,
Mike, let me tell you why I'm laughing. I really laugh because I honestly believe that. And that's why I'm laughing, because it has worked my entire life. When people hate you, love them. When there's injustice, fight it. When people make you angry or people curse you, forgive them. And you will see, for the listeners, if you practice that, you will see how much your life will improve.
Well, that would be a mic drop moment, man, for me. I think to conclude on that note, you know, I for those that are listening that maybe don't know Professor Ed, you don't know, you know, maybe this is the first time that you've tuned into him. He's a man worth following. We're going to, of course, tag him in the post below. And Eddie, I just want to thank you so much for hopping on, number one, but also just for sharing what at times can be really personal things, and the fact that you're willing to open them up with me today, I know has helped me personally, and my prayer is that it's helping those that are listening as well. So thanks so much, and for all those listening, man, thanks for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you, Mike.